Do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
Feels good to say that. It feels good to be back here for a minute. You guys know what that means. It's the Mark Order Podcast. Quite the episode, quite the past couple of episodes, honestly. So some good stuff happening. I'm here with Joe and with Ryan, and I'm here.
Who are you again? I'm sorry.
I didn't have time to pull it off, but I genuinely was going to make vignettes. I was just like me, just in this dumbass room, like being like Kate with like dumb AI music over it so that I could reintroduce myself properly. But I wasn't able to pull it off. I am Kate of the Mark Order and also Fight Club. And I have lungs now, which is pretty cool. I do have rehab on Wednesday, so if I am breathing shallow, it's okay. I'm okay. It's just been a day. But yeah, I'm excited to be back, fellas. How are you?
I'm good, Ryan.
I'm good, just in shock, you know, seeing Kate. It's, you know, the chat is wondering if this is AI, and honestly, I get it.
Is it AI? No. That's a great question. Let's explore the possibilities of if I'm AI. The first option is. No, it's not. It's not AI. I don't look cute enough to. If I was going to be fake, I would at least have put on like more makeup and stuff.
You'd put your hand up and you only have four fingers.
Or like. This is my one hand, like just continuing on for
my hand, guys.
For a bit.
We don't have the budget for
but
that.
But so much has happened. Yeah, it's true. It's true, unfortunately. I haven't been on since last year, y'all. I'm happy to be back today. It's been a while. How's everyone in the chat? It feels weird. It feels good, though. Like, I miss it. I like talking about AEW. I like hanging out with Joe when Ryan's here. So, like, you know, you take what you can get, but I'm going to be here as long as I can be on this episode. We're going to see. There's other possible breaking news that I would have to go to Fight Club to assist with possibly, but we'll see what comes up, because the big one today, the Rascals coming to AEW because TNA is LOL with their contracts. They have their big AMC debut tomorrow. And the Rascals have just been such a staple there for so long, like in different permutations. Like Wesley was obviously in NXT for a little bit. He had a great run there. I don't know why he didn't get called up, but letting him go was such a head scratcher. But the unit of who the Rascals are, and honestly, like as someone that covers NXT, having them be a part of that crossover, they were one of the brightest spots, because like that heel turn and reunion angle that they did with that crossover was really, really well done. My guess is it was kind of like similar to I'm a Duke Hudson, Duke Hansen stan, where they were like, we just don't see a path to the main roster for them. And I think that's insane. But my guess is like, what else would Wesley have done there? Now the NXT men's division is extremely weak right now. There's a million things you could have done within that program, but this is a really, really big get for AEW, and the trios division has just been in the wind. Like the trios titles aren't defended on pay-per-view all that often. When they do, they don't feel important. I forgot the ops still had them last pay-per-view cycle. Like it hasn't been great. And a team like the Rascals, what I like is a few things. One, it feels like anytime there's a trio that gets momentum, one of the people in the group always gets injured. And AEW made the wise call to sign all four of them, which I think is a great call, because it feels like this happened with the Gun Club, right? Like this happens pretty consistently. Two, I think I just want to see them against the Young Bucks, whatever permutation, like them versus the Elite. Give it to me immediately. And three, like, I guess this isn't so much like a strength of them signing, but I certainly feel like, you know, I'm working at the place I do, like there's no place that Sean Rossap hoops more than contract news, and both New Japan and TNN, it was like all of these contracts up at the same time. And with TNA, everyone was like, oh, these contracts are up around the end of the year, obviously they'll make all these re-signings before the big AMC debut. They did not make a bunch of re-signings before the AMC debut. Their contracts are extremely poorly done. They have champions that are booking other dates because they aren't locked down for the taping schedule, which, like, some people blame the talent for taking those bookings. I think that's a TNA problem with their contracts. They run super short contracts, 6 months. They'll put titles on people that don't have them. They let their champions go to NXT. Like, watching NXT on Tuesday, there's an international title match between Stax and Shiloh Hill, and there's no TNA angle. I mean, 2 days before their big debut, it's a fucking disaster from the outside. I don't know what the inside looks like. I don't know if that's a funding thing or whatever, but between Jake Doyle and this, you got to wonder, like, are there other big names that could be around the corner, just because we saw so many contracts come up and Killer Kelly is leaving, right? Like that's been put out there, I think, by Fightful Select. Myron Reed's wife, by the way. So, like, I wouldn't be shocked if she showed up on the ROH AEW brand. But I think the assumption was, like, well, they'll lock in a lot of these big names. They haven't. Like, they locked in AJ Francis, I think, and a couple of others. But, like, Mustafa Ali, obviously a huge one. Santana, a huge one. But, like, there's some really, really great talent there. The issue with TNA has never been the talent. It's been keeping the talent around. It's been the stories. It's been the production. It's been a lot of things. But, like, they've got this big show. And to lose the Rascals the day before, like, my goodness, that just feels like, A, maybe a warning shot debuting them and Jake Doyle back-to-back weeks. And B, like, LOL TNA continues. Like, it just feels like even with this TV deal, they can't get themselves out of it. But I've yapped long enough. I'll throw it to Joe and then to Ryan. Joe, what do you make of all this? Are you excited to see the Rascals in AEW? Do you know anything about the Rascals? Where do you stand on this?
I do, and I am. I think, to your point, the Bucks are in fun match to have. You have Jet Speed, you have Skyflight, I mean, you have all these groups that I think the Rascals can really work well together with. And to TNA point, I guess they got the bag for the TV deal, and then they'll try to figure out from there. It reminds me of a lot like, college football season right now is all about transfer portal, right? It reminds me of a lot of, like, cherry picking and trying, like, get people on bad deals or short-term deals. And that's kind of what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, I like that comparison. We got a little Dante Moore situation kicking around. But yeah, you mentioned Skyflight, and I'm glad you did, because Zeta Steel had about 20 seconds today on TV. And I think a lot of people liked what they saw from her. She's kind of a low-key Steel from WWE ID, in the same way that I feel like AEW Dark talent got picked up by NXT, like the now Fallon Henley and a couple of other ones there. And I don't say that in a bad way. I say that in a good way. Some talent gets spotlights and other companies pick them up because they see something in them. That's a beautiful thing for the scene. But you mentioning Skyflight reminded me of Zeta Steel too. Like there's been some nice padding with the AEW roster. And Ryan, you and I have even just talked about this separately. Like it always feels like these rosters get bloated, but then in both WWE and in AEW, the injury bugs just go crazy. And the way AEW wrestlers wrestle on pay-per-views, that risk goes a little bit higher, I think, as well. So what do you make of the Rascals, and how are you feeling about Jake Doyle showing up, Zeta Steel showing up, kind of just like this new influx in general? It feels like they're pulling less from the former WWE well and more from other places.
like that the Rascals are here because now I can just keep saying those damn Rascals.
Those little Rascals.
Yeah, those little Rascals, those damn Rascals. Those jokes are just coming all the time. I was one of those people who was shocked when Wesley was let go from NXT or wasn't pushed forward. Especially because he's still young enough. I don't know how you couldn't see a path forward to him on the main roster. You know, I'm with you on Duke Hudson, but at least I could be like, maybe there's an age thing. I don't know how old Duke is, but I think he's a little bit older than Wesley. So maybe there's an age thing there or something. But I just couldn't fathom it. But he's killing it. The Rascals in general are killing it. I'm glad they're bringing groups over. I like that instead of like an individual because it, like you said, the Trios Trials, I was so excited when they made them. But they put less attention on trios since they've had titles than before they ever had them. And I'm like, guys, you can be having all these trios matches all the time now, and they automatically have stakes. And because your roster is a little bloated, it gives you a chance to use all these people because they're in trios matches. You should at least every episode should have a trios feud, trios match on it. And I mean by that, like, not a, well, kind of what we saw tonight, which was, you know, with the women with, you know, Babes of Wrath and Statlander versus, you know, I know it's not their name, but I always want to just call them Twisted Sisters.
Sisters of Sin.
I know, but for whatever, it's just in my head, but Sisters of Sin, like, that wasn't a true trios match in the sense of, like, they're telling, like, you have tags and you have individuals. No, you should have Destiny Trios. And I think the Rascals kind of opened that up pretty little bit, like you said, because they operate as a group. Doyle was a great signing. I mean, we'll talk about that tonight. Doyle rules.
Doyle rules.
there is something to be said that they're doing this right before TNA goes on AMC, and TNA lately has been feeling themselves a bit since they got this TV contract of almost like, we're the second company, we're going to be. And I don't care personally. I want all the companies to be great. I don't want, you know, just one company. And we could talk about this. Like, I love Joe's comparison of like the transfer portal. I love people going from company to company. Cause if you're not getting used in one, go to another and get used there. Like, there's,
it keeps the products fresh too.
Yeah.
If you don't get burned out on seeing the same people in the same environments constantly.
But that being said, if you're going to take shots at someone, have your people prepared. Have your things lined up. And I think the Rascals is a big shot. I think someone with a great name in chat, Orion Sully, says that CMLL announced that Mascara Dorado and Persephone are on dual contracts with CMLL and AEW. Another great, you know, move, which is something that AEW utilizes that apparently WWE doesn't, which is weird to me since they have that TNA relationship. You think they would get into some dual contract natures there.
Sure.
Now, guys, Kate hinted at a big story, but I'm going to break it so I can usurp everyone. I am now signed with TNA.
Oh, wow. Okay, congratulations.
I'm actually Mr. Elegance. You thought they got rid of it. You thought that they wasted everyone's time. No, it's me the whole time.
I mean, I'm getting paid $5 for sure. Like you definitely do. I just wish we could have seen your admission video. That's all. I just want to see.
I'm that good. I didn't need one.
Wow. You just negotiated behind the back. I genuinely am so, I'm perplexed that TNA has not signed Ben Bishop. Like, for that role specifically, like, Ben Bishop as Mr. Elegance would be so great. But like, that environment for Ben Bishop seems like such a no-brainer to me. To your point about the dual contracts, I really love seeing that because it means wrestlers can get paid without losing stake, and companies can hold on to people in ways that they couldn't before. It's very interesting to see what that has meant, because I'm team get paid by everyone, however you want, wherever you can. But like, what that did with Takeshita in New Japan was put him in a weird spot where he was an outsider. Now, they made it part of the story, which I think is great. But there's some very real belief of people examining what those partnerships look like and how productive they are. I think with AEW, there's good and bad. I think with WWE and TNA, other than them renting out AJ Styles to you for when you have a big event? I'm so confused. I'm so confused about what they gain. Like, it's very, very odd. You also, like, you can't have your cake and eat it too, in the sense that you're like, this is our largest crowd ever. We're doing better than we've ever been. But, like, also then turning to your talent and saying, like, we don't have the money to lock you down. Like, okay, so where's the money from this big TV deal going? And I've heard whispers of, like, the perception of TNA from the momentum they've gained on the outside, like, not all the talent is stoked about what that means on the inside, because it doesn't fix the creative. It doesn't fix the stupidity. They're not seeing a bunch more money from it. So, like, cool, very cool that they're in double the amount of homes that they were. Like, AMC is in double the amount of homes that Access was, I think. So even if they make zero more dollars, that's great for them. But at the same time, like, well, the outskirts are very excited. Like, not everybody on the inside is so stoked about this. Like, that it feels like the company made a big chess move, and none of that's really trickled down to the talent. So, like, I think most people aren't taking it seriously when TNA calls themselves number two, but, like, I think the gap is very, very, very wide there. Very, very wide there. Tim McVowell saying too, like, TNA has nobody left on the roster. They don't have anybody on their roster to begin with. Like, nobody's really signed and locked in. Now, they signed Santana and they signed Mustafa, and those are big ones. Now, Mustafa was in... Cedric's a good one, too. Cedric's a good one, too. I know Mustafa was in short-term and long-term negotiations, which for TNA could mean, like, 6 months up to whenever. Like, the last Mustafa Ali contract, I think, was 6 months. So, who knows what these guys have? And as far as the WWE side, they're like, well, we can just rent these guys whenever we feel like and not pay more for them, which is like the mode WWE is in right now. So, okay. So we do have more news. Typical Sean Ross app. Let me post it while I'm on air to try and get people to tune in. Tune in to the post show. But Powerhouse Hobbs is leaving AEW. That just went up. My guess is that the actuality of it is they're probably taping that match for Collision right now. And so that story and information came out after that his last match got recorded. So that's a surprising one, but not a surprising one in a few ways, in that it feels like he just never really, like, fully found his footing as a breakout star. And I don't think that's his fault. But this is the benefit of having multiple places to work, because I think he can go to NXT, who desperately needs men's single stars right now, and be a huge, huge help to that division. I am surprised by it. I feel like he seemed like an AEW guy just from, like, how you associate people with products. But I hope he does wonderful things in WWE. I can't wait to see what his future looks like. I just am always concerned by WWE because the booking is what it is. But yeah, Hobbs moving on. Everybody's on the move. We got some crazy contract cycles in store, and there's going to be more. There's going to be more from a few companies, and it'll be interesting to see, especially on the WWE side, heading into Royal Rumble and WrestleMania and what things look like. But thoughts on Powerhouse moving on to WWE?
So we were just talking about how good it is to have different companies. This is probably one of the best examples, because I love Powerhouse Hobbs. So anything I say here, going to please understand that I was a fan of his when he started on Dark, which is where he started. He got over by losing matches on Dark but looking awesome. He's kind of not doing much in AEW right now. I know he's trios, but that we just said it, that trios belt means nothing. He's a hanger on to Samoa Joe. He's not his own thing. He had moments where you thought he was going to break out, and it just never continued for whatever reason. And I don't see any path in AEW in the near future for him where that changes. Like, they'd have to really change their entire booking to put him back in a place where he feels hot again. Whereas He steps into WWE. We're both assuming NXT, just the way they just did all those call-ups. It doesn't make sense.
And they need it. Like, that men's division is in such need.
So you put him in NXT where they could use him right away. He'd be a monster there. It's what I think he needs, and I think it helps NXT majorly. I think he is in so many ways made for WWE. He's so impressive. He's good in there. He's not Kenny Omega in the ring. He's not one of those guys. He's not that level in AEW, but he's good. So whenever you put him in a match, you're going to be fine. He's picture perfect. And this is one of those times where I'm like, AEW is losing something because they're losing Hobbs. And I think that is a loss. But from their point of view, it is a guy they're not utilizing. So this doesn't reshape their landscape by any means. They're not losing one of their biggest guys. But that, you know, but then I'll always say, like, how do you not hit bigger on him? He had momentum at some points. Like, it is a letdown that they didn't push him harder, but he's going to throw. I can't see any scenario in which he doesn't thrive in NXT.
My only concern is that they get so. NXT's actually gotten much better about this than the main roster, but they tend to go, like, we have this archetype checked off. And right now there is Obafemi, there is Dion Lennox, who has the same backbreaker that Hobbs is known for, and they just introduced Keanu Carver, and they kind of have this with Jasper Troy too, of like extremely strong, dominant black guy. Like that's just something that WWE tends to say, okay, we have this box checked. So my hope is that they, meaning the creative department of NXT and WWE, create distinctions that are not so one note character wise, because they tend to be like, you have two traits and that's it. In WWE, like there is dimension within these things. He has the presentation for it. He has the look. He has the presence for it. I have no doubt that if they set him up for success, he will be a monster star. Ricky's over there. Punk and Hobbs, I think, had a good relationship to my knowledge. So, like, there's going to be people in his corner for sure. As far as what it means for AEW, like, this is where having a bloated roster is tough. And this is where, like, you are just inevitably in any wrestling company, like, there's just going to be some people you miss on. And I think when they scrapped Rampage, like, one of the things that happened was you got less, like, multi-person matches and less women's matches. And it's good that they canceled Rampage, because I don't think it was doing very much. But, like, that is one thing that they haven't fully figured out how to compensate for. And Hobbs was always a part of a multi-person picture. Now, the other thing is they're not going to set you on a massive run if you're going to leave, right? Like, we learned that with Mariah May was off TV for a long time, like, because she, I think, at some point after the Hollywood ending, let them know she was going to leave. Ricky Starks at the time made it clear that he was going to leave, and they benched him for, like, months and months and months, which was not the intention, I don't think, of Ricky. I think he was saying, don't put me over if I'm on my way out of here, right? So they're also not going to push those trios titles if one of the guys in the trio is leaving. Now, what they set up for this episode of Collision could certainly set those trios back on the right path if what we assume to be true happens. But I do think 2025 was a much better year than 2024 was for AEW. And I think 2026, if they adjust with their women's division and their multi-man pictures, they could be in an even better spot. But this is kind of one of the consequences of those things. Joe, your thoughts on Powerhouse here?
Yeah, I feel like, unfortunately, injuries derailed so much of his start and stopping of his trajectory. And I feel like he hit his ceiling. I felt like, he had the Trio Championship, he had the TNT Championship, but I felt like that time his ceiling at the moment of where he's at in AEW is at his career. So, a fresh start is probably best for him. And, you gain four rascals. I guess four rascals equals one Hobbs, maybe?
Probably, like, body mass-wise, that's definitely true. I think at minimum. But, you know, I think where they missed was when they were doing like those Book of Hobbs vignettes and he was posed with the mid-card title and then they like did that weird QTV thing. It felt like it never really took back off. Like it felt like if there was going to be a moment for him, it was going to be then. It was going to be then. So, so that's kind of all the free agent news for now, but exciting stuff. Do you fellas want to get into this episode of the old Dynamite here?
We do.
Let's do it. We have Samoa Joe who spoke earlier in the day. And Hangman representing kind of like this foolish fella who doesn't learn from getting his ass kicked over and over and over again, which you gotta love in some baby faces, but they'll deal with each other later because there is going to be a trios title defense. That's obviously going to be for Collision, but we get Brian Keith entering because Joe has put a bounty out on Hangman, which I love. Brian Keith, this is another interesting one. It feels like Jericho's on the way out. So what happens with the other components of the learning tree? We have, oh my God, I almost called him Big Cass. What's his name?
Bill.
Big Bill. I always like go to William Morrison, but he has a contract coming up, I think, in the spring too. But I always feel like Brian Keith was destined for a fun singles run with this character. But he's going to be answering the bounty there. But we open with Pac and Darby Allin. This went just about as you would expect from an in-ring standpoint. Darby wins here. But Pac tapping out, I think, was super surprising for the end of this. This match was super, super fun. Like, I feel like everyone says, like, everyone knows how good Pac is, but he's still somehow underrated because, like, he should probably be in that maybe be the best wrestler in the world conversation with what he's able to do. But we got a crazy springboard coffin splash in this. Like the way Pac does things, like we got an avalanche belly to belly in this. The explosiveness of Pac's offense is just absolutely fucking nuts. But Pac tapping and Darby Allin winning. This was really good. Like, I feel like the story of this was like that for Pac, it was a business transaction. And for Darby, it was extremely personal because he's dealt with the rest of the Death Riders. And the Death Riders losses intrigue me because at some point it's going to be Jon Moxley gets all the success and the rest of the Death Riders don't. Right. So maybe these losses are to feed something like that. Joe, we'll kick it to you for the reactions of this first match. What do you think?
Fun match. That belly-to-belly on Darby's steel steps. Like, my God. And then all the other bumps he did throughout the night, throughout the match, on his back.
I don't know how he has his spine.
No, I don't.
This is how he voluntarily makes his money. Like, this is how he's chosen to make his money. And I'm like, man, that's a rough way to go.
The thing I had, I guess we talked about last week a little bit, was I didn't love how Darby was desperate. He felt came across more heelish to me, where he was threatening to harm Pac if he didn't give him the match. In this match, he kind of goes the shortcut route, using the chair on Pac's ankle to get the win. I felt like that kind of a weird desperation thing that I wouldn't see from Darby, especially when Pac was so dead set on taking doing this one-on-one, and he didn't ask Willard to come out there, and Willard came on his own. It just felt weird that way to me, and the more I watched the match, I don't think I hit the idea of this whole journey of him going through the Death Riders, changing him for the worse, and making him more becoming more what he didn't want to become, and maybe down the road having a double turn of some sort with him.
I have been wanting to see what a heel Darby proper would look like for a long time. But it's such a risk because there's a lot of, I guess we got some top heel rejuvenation, but like Darby's just so perpetually over. I like what you said though, about like, he came out a different man than he entered this feud with the Death Riders. And I think that's kind of all you can ask from something like this. But yeah, those, man, does he have extra spines? Like, are they interchangeable? Does he have disposable spines, I guess, is what I'm asking. Because some of the bumps that this dude takes, like, everybody gets so scared and I'm one of them. But like, he's one of the least injured people there somehow. I don't get it. But PAX a Pro 2. Ryan, your thoughts on this story and what it's done for the respective groups we got going on here, for Darby kind of being spit up and chewed out in a different way, and where things are going with the Death Riders here.
So I appreciate you saying this story because you knew that I missed this match because I had a work event for the first half hour of Dynamite.
I was going to let you volunteer that if you wanted.
No, I did. I missed this match and most of the next one because of a work event I got home late from. But the story wise, yeah, this is interesting. You know, are they trying to make Darby fall into the abyss of evil? Like, you know, by doing these things that are clearly more heelish than anything, but Darby was always kind of psycho. So I don't really like, he's kind of got that anti-hero side of him. Like where like he's willing to go places no other person is to win. But at the same point, he fully expects you to do it back to him.
Like, right.
he's not mad that you like he wasn't mad at Pac for, you know, throwing him through tables and lighting him on fire. He just wanted his rematch. Like, right. That's Darby's weird like that. I think you are right. You're going to get another Darby Pac match because you can't have this and then not have another one. You are right, though. I think this is part of the Death Riders falling apart and Moxley being on the outside where, like, they start blaming him for their losses because they're focusing on him and not on their own stuff. And now these losses are piling up. So it'll be interesting to see how Darby plays into that. And in some ways, if they wanted to turn him heel, well, they could, because if Mox goes face and gets beat up by the Death Riders, Darby Allin could easily cut a promo of like, I told you I was going to take everything.
Sure.
Like, this was my evil plan the whole time. Like, I cost you everything. And it's an interesting spin. But I could also just see them doing nothing with this. This is one of those stories where I'm, like, mixed on because I actually like what's happening. But it's, for lack of a better term, because if Darby, I've been burned by Darby in the past where, like,
sure,
you think it's going to do some magnificent change for him and it just same old Darby. So it's that's the weird thing when you deal with him.
Well, he's climbed back down the mountain, Ryan, so he has to be. After climbing Everest, you have to come back a different person. That's just the rules. You would think his spine would be in even worse shape because it would have gotten compressed on the on the climb, but yeah. Let's keep it moving along here. This was a really fun opener, like to the shock of nobody. Like I don't think there's ever a match where I watch Pac and I'm like, oh, that was fine. Like, that dude's a beast, and they have such different styles and such great chemistry. That was a lot of fun. Ryan, you can go back and watch it at your leisure. I wasn't gonna throw you under the bus in my first night back. That seemed kind of fucked up, honestly.
I'm actually a little disappointed you didn't. I expected more of you.
I'll do better. Well, let's move on to Hanger and Brian Keith. These two have such fun chemistry. Big Bill's in the corner. This match was a blast. The in-ring is just like never the issue with Dynamite, and tonight is no exception. Like, we had a lot of fun things here, but Hanger winning, Swerve coming out here and choking out Bill with his chain. That was a super fun detail here. Paige gets on the apron and hits the buckshot lariat for the win. Some fun stuff in this, but it was just nice to see Brian Keith wrestle again. Like, he's someone that when he signed, I was like, he's going to be on a really, really cool run. And they had those super fun vignettes for him and stuff. And like, his presentation was so much fun. This was hard hitting. There were a lot of nasty forearms in here from Hanger. We got a great drop toe hold in this into the bottom rope, which I like when drop toe holds send people into the ropes in inconvenient ways. That's just a fun thing. Brian Keith has a nice fallaway slam, which feels like a fun, I'm the little guy in this tag team, but I learned from my big friend kind of deal with this. But this was really good. It was nice to see Swerve in his corner. It's nice to see what's left of the learning tree kind of getting back on track here. It's just a matter of, like, do we think Hanger and Swerve are going to be on the same page? Because that would be a really fun tag run. Or is Swerve going to turn heel to repay the favor for what Hangman did to him for all that time? Like, there are so many directions this could go, but I'm loving the reunited and it feels so good vibe of Swerve and Hanger right now. Ryan, we'll kick to you first.
So good, reunited.
No, we haven't had as much steam, Ryan.
Yeah, I don't know. Because I had to, like, remember things and try to lead the show. It's much easier when I don't have to do that. I can sing a bit more. So again, I only caught the tail end of this. I'm with you that I like the Hangman and Swerve feelings right now. I would be upset if they at any point in the night try to, not night, sorry, any point in the near future try to separate them into like a feud again. I think it's too soon. I think you have to let that play. Even if you don't give them a tag title, you have to at least let these good vibes play out for a while longer. Keep them, because it would just feel rushed. I more want to talk about Bounty Hunter, Brian Keith, and Big Bill. I'm with you. I'm glad to see them doing some stuff again. I would like the two of them to be Bounty Hunters, and they got to win a couple matches. So, like, there's got to be some stuff, like, you know, they get paid to beat someone up. You know, like, you do a couple squashes, you do whatever, then they get, because I just think it's a fun gimmick. It's like the old APA gimmick in the WWE. Like, these guys get hired to just hurt people and, you know, hunt down bounties. I just think it'd be fun. You have Bounty Hunter, and Big Bill is big enough to be realistic with it. So, like, you have the fun there. I don't know. It'd be something different for the, something different but similar, because Brian Keith has the Bounty Hunter thing, but different enough that no one's doing it right now.
Sure. I'm intrigued to see, because it never seemed like a supernatural fit, but I like the juxtaposition of the two of them. So I'm intrigued to see where things go, because I feel like they could also succeed in singles ways, but like they could also add a third and be a trio. When you have like a big guy who has a hell of a sense of humor, and you have Brian Keith, who's a little more understated, but like has a bit of a cooler thing going on. I feel like there's a nice dynamic there that you could add or subtract from. That could be cool. But Joe, what did you think of the match? And then we'll slide into the post-match, because we do get a nice Hangman calling Brian Keith a dumbass in this as well.
Oh, I thought it was a fun match. I mean, I know they haven't wrestled too much in AEW, but yeah, no complaints between the two. I like them when they wrestle other people, so wrestling together, no complaints. And also a big fan, like you said, of when the Bounty Hunter goes after Hangman or the Bounty Hunter goes after Bandito. I like the whole playing off that gimmicks. This next trio, I was thinking about where Big Bill and Brian Keith can go. If they want to be a group still, I think it's to give them maybe a younger person, a younger talent, and let them be kind of the mentors for them. Or, Big Bill is eventually on his way out later on. And maybe Brian Keith would be interesting in another group, say, like the Hurt Syndicate or something like that, where you can use him and use his temperament in a different fashion. But yeah, I mean, I love the Hangman Swerve right now. They're getting the kind of one-off matching for some bunch of people that we don't always get on AEW right now. So that's been a really good use of them, in my opinion.
I agree. I still am writing for the trio of Hangman, Bandito, and who's the other cowboy? Oh, Brian Keith. Yeah, that being a trio of like the Outlaws. The Cowboy Outlaws would be a super, super fun way to go. But post-match, we do have Hanger saying, Brian, you go and collect your bounty now, dumbass, which I love. He says Samoa Joe's not man enough to fight him, which I think we just know is categorically untrue, but that's fine. But he says that's the excuse for hiring Brian Keith with this. Swerve has a message for MJF and says, if you come out victorious against Bandido, it means that you actually lost because we are coming after you, meaning him and Hangman. He says so relentlessly in 2026, and that it's his New Year's resolution to get his world title back. Whose house? Swerve's house. And then we go right into battle cry hitting and a returning Kenny Omega. And he's got his eyes on MJF here too. This was a good promo from Kenny. And I think Max and Kenny's first match gets kind of lost in both of their catalogs. Cause I think when you think of MJF's title reign, you immediately go to the Iron Man match with Danielson and like, better than you, baby, and all that fun stuff. But there was just a random collision world title match between MJF and Kenny, and it was fucking awesome. So I would love to see that get run back as well. But Kenny says he has to prove to himself and to everyone else that he gets called the god of professional wrestling for a reason, basically, that it means something, and that Kenny still believes you can win a belt. You just can't be EVP at the snap of your fingers and make it happen. So he has to win some matches first to make it happen, which is something that is missing across a lot of wrestling television these days. So that was nice. And Hangman says it looks like three men want this title. It's not a team effort. If they cross paths on the way to the title, may the best man win. So three baby faces going after the top heel in the company is a good place to have your top of the card, especially considering Will Ospreay is still looming in the back, probably. And then Don Callis enters. A lot of dovetailing here, but it all made sense. But let's, before we get to Don Callis, because we know that's going to go into some yapping between him and Kenny, what did you guys think of this setup that we have here with Hanger and Swerve and Kenny all going after Max? I feel like there's probably not three bigger faces with Ospreay on the bench. And I don't know if you have a bigger heel in the company than Max. So that feels like a top of the card kind of setup here. I'll leave it to you. Whoever wants.
I'm curious to see how long they let this burn. I'm because with Hangman, when you see going after the Ops right now, the trio championships, if they win those, you know, how long did that delay his world title aspirations? Although, you know, in AEW, you can hold multiple belts at the same time, so that doesn't matter.
You have to.
Yeah, So yeah, I'm just going to see, like, you know, how soon they do this. Because with Kenny saying he needs matches, you know, I'm trying to think how, maybe like, I'm thinking like mid-year or how far down the road this year do we get to see, you know, all three of the guys compete to see who have the most wins? Do we get a triple threat type of match?
Sure. I think also of note, like, Revolution is late this year, and they don't have any pay-per-views. Like, they've been at a basically a one-a-month a clip, and we have no pay-per-views in January or February for AEW, or it's the very end of February is when Revolution is. So it's late. They have, like, 8 weeks of programming or something that they're playing with in the beginning of the year. So my bigger thing was it's felt like Kenny's kind of more of a part-timer, and he's saying he's got to pick up wins. So I'm intrigued to see who he wrestles against, but Ryan, how do you feel about all of this coalescing?
I think if nothing else, it gives a... It makes MJF look good.
Sure.
You have your three biggest faces, like you said. Three of the biggest stars in the entire company. You know, like the guy who was the star in Omega. Maybe the coolest guy in Swerve, and then the main character in Hangman. And all they're talking about is MJF. And I think that's important. Like it's kind of putting the title picture front and center of, like, no matter what else is going on, this is all these three men can think about. I just love that. I think that you don't get enough of that sometimes where, like, and none of them are, it's not one of those MJF cuts a promo, one guy walks out and then another guy walks out, which happens all the time. This was more organic, even though Kenny did just walk out, but still felt more organic. And they weren't yelling at each other like you get in those promos. They were just all talking about how they dislike MJF. So I think I loved that.
Yeah, this wasn't a revolving promo parade, which I hate. I hate that. This was much more organically done. LaRon Ford is saying it in the chat, like, there's so many damn titles in AEW that it's important to make people feel like the world title feels important. And LaRon said it makes the title feel important that so many people are chasing after it. It's kind of that simple. Like, a bunch of top talent are chasing what's supposed to be the biggest prize in your company. And we've gotten so oversaturated with belts that it is nice to kind of get back to that.
Did someone tell them to do that for the women's division?
Yes, boy, please. That would be neat. Boy, that would be neat. My God. Oh, man. So we got Don Callis coming out. And Don says he's always been a big fan of MJF, which is great. But he has to question even his logic thinking about associating with a scumbag like you. This was some really good stuff. He kind of just says, like, puts over his own faction here. It was hard to hear him with the heat that he gets. Like, crowds are just in on booing this guy now. But I love that they keep trotting him out for Kenny, because they're just destined to do this dance forever, it feels like. He throws Josh Alexander into the mix and says that Tony Khan will have it. If you will have it, Josh, can we do this tonight? And Callis objects to this immediately. So it's good. We're going to get Josh Alexander on Dynamite next week, because what daddy says goes, according to Don. But as the family's leaving, we get more dovetailing. I really, really like how much this is all kind of coalesced, but that match gets made. I'm so excited about Jake Doyle and Mark Davis working together. We're going to talk about that in a second, but first we have Renee walking backstage with Brody King, who is so over. John Cruz, who did a great job last week, interrupts and tells Brody King that the masked moron friend of his to never attack him again. Brody says he will, but it's his turn now. And Brody King has a standby match, and it'll be with John Cruz. And John Cruz says he isn't dressed to wrestle, but it doesn't matter. Brody King beats the hell out of Jonathan Cruz, who's definitely not Serpentico, in 35 seconds. So that was a squashity squash squash. But Brody King, like, continues to be over in a really special way that, like, he's over, so no matter what he does is going to be over, which is rad. So some good stuff there. I'm really, actually, after seeing Serpentico so much, like, John Cruz has been very good on the mic with this stuff the past couple weeks. Like, I've really, really liked it. Joe, we'll start with you. What did you think of this Brody King squash situation?
I like what they're doing with him now, since NGA is kind of highlighted doing his single thing. I like, and with the vignettes they've been doing with Brody, just kind of reestablishing him as a dominant wrestler again. And so I'm hoping this leads to him getting a match with MJF, if he, you know, wants to try to help him, you know, avenge Bandito. So yeah, I'm really impressed with what they're trying to do to jumpstart him back again.
I feel like everybody's just like, when is Buddy coming back? And it doesn't feel like it's going to be for a while. So let's give Brody King some awesome shit to do in the meantime. Love that he's still in Bandito's corner and that Bandito is in his corner too. Because post-match, we also get Brody King just saying that Bandito is going to kick MJF's ass and then he's going to stand in the ring with him. So simple and sweet. But Ryan, any thoughts on this?
One, I just want to establish we don't want to walk over too quickly that Callis is daddy.
Of course, but, yeah. I just figured it went without saying.
This was a fun squash match in the best kind of way, where it had relevance to the bigger story because MJF and Cruz, and they're tied together. You're right, Cruz has been really good recently, so he deserves some kind of, I know it gets squashed, but it was still some kind of moment. And it just made Brody King look so cool. So I loved it.
I feel like a squash is usually so absent of context because squashes are just like jobber number seven who was in the back. But like this having just a little bit of story made that fun. And God bless John Cruz. He makes the Samoa Joe walkaway spot look insane when he has that midair reaction. He always is like making the best out of Serpentico. So some good stuff there. But we got our 4-way tag team match to determine the number one contender for the AEW World Men's Tag Team Championships. And we have Davis and Doyle with Don Callis against Jet Speed, against GOA with Ricochet out there, and the Young Bucks. And turns out tag wrestling's really fun when you just organize the pieces and you let them fucking wrestle. This is one of those ones that, like, I would just say go watch it, because there's a lot that happens in it and it's very, very fun. But Jake Doyle and Mark Davis win. I'll just throw in there that, like, the way Kyle Fletcher took off, you just naturally get kind of concerned for Davis, because, like, they came in as a tag team and Kyle Fletcher's star is just shining so bright singles wise. He's like floating around this faction, but he's not doing a whole heck of a lot. Jake Doyle coming in and being his tag team partner is a really fucking fun combination. And this whole group of guys, because their styles are all, like, different, but coalesced really nicely. Like, Ricochet on commentary is always so funny. Khan is incredible. Like, he's so smooth. I found out that he played football with a friend of mine today. I'll type who in the chat. Andrew. Well, there you go. Ryan will get a pop out of it. You'll see why I said that in a second. But this was just fun. Like, it's the right group of guys. I don't know where Khan gets off doing a moonsault all of a sudden. Like, that's a fun Ricochet thing that he learned. But this was a blast. Like, this is one of those kind of hallmarks of AEW where it's like kick-ass tag wrestling with people of all different experiences and styles, and when you line it up to have stakes behind it, it's a really, really fun part of the show. It doesn't have to be that complicated, and it also doesn't have to be for $100,000 every time. Joe, what do you think of what we got here?
It was a lot going on in this match, and mostly all in a good way. I think the only thing that I wasn't a huge fan of was really just a lot of the Bucks and Jet Speed, like, choreographed teamwork things. It kind of took a while to set up, but I really like the fact that they're giving a lot of momentum behind Davis and Doyle. Big fan of Double D's, and they're kind of like a big, like, you know, a classic throwback 80s tag team of just big, powerful hoss men. Yeah. Throwing people around without a care in the world. So I thought Doyle had a beautiful little counter to that Toronto. That was fun. I haven't seen that before.
He's great. He's so great. I'm so glad he's getting the shine that he deserves because of stuff like that.
And yeah, I'm just glad they won. I'm glad we have some clarity of the post-match and kind of where that led as far as winning and them challenging FTR.
That is what happens after. Chaos. Everybody had a chance to shine in this. Jack Perry also made a return of note in this to help out the Young Bucks, because it was like a bunch of tag teams of people that had a friend. So the Bucks needed a friend out there as well. But I also popped for the post-match because we do have FTR and Stokely. And FTR comes to the ring. They raise their titles and Davis and Doyle launch this attack. The refs and security break it up, but, like, the highlight for me is just Stokely in his wheelchair watching the world burn. Like, he's just sitting there. It was like the dog "This Is Fine" meme. Like, I was absolutely cracking up at this. But Ryan, your thoughts on the tag match and the post match here?
So I've been asked by the chat to fun it up.
I'm going to say
it was a 4 out of 4. A lot of fun. I might have just peed a little. I love the
mix-up. Hell yes.
Did not expect that. It was a nice mix of smaller athletic guys and then big meaty men. I do love me some big D's.
Who doesn't love a big D?
Exactly. Ugh. Doyle and I want to call him Dunkzilla.
He is.
Yeah. Davis. Doyle and Dunkzilla. Yeah, Davis. great tag team. Joe is right. It's such a throwback, but in the best way, because they both can work so well. So like, they're not slow and plodding. They go. And it's good to just see Davis have something again after all the injuries he had, that like something he can sink his teeth into. So man, I loved the match. I really enjoyed
Seattle, the match. Like watching Aussie Open versus FTR and seeing Davis's handbrake and them just working through the rest of the match. Like, you could see him know that was happening. And the match was such magic before. And it wasn't just because Kyle Fletcher is great. Like, Dax and Mark Davis had some really good chemistry. So I'm excited for this because I want to see that get run back.
Am I the only one who expected someone to come out and like push Stokely down with the wheelchair down towards the ring?
I thought about that, but it doesn't seem very Callis family-y. Like, that's such a, like, who from the Callis family is gonna do that? But
that's true.
I do appreciate that level of silliness. What'd you say?
I don't know. I said Rocky. Rocky seems
like Rocky Romero movie. Would do it. Actually, you know what? That's a great shout.
Rocky loves Emily.
Joni loves Chachi. What are you gonna do? But well, let's move on to this women's stuff, because I hate it when world champions get pinned, but that's what happens here. Some good news on the women's tag front, though. We do have Penelope Ford returning to action, which is great. You want to talk about people that have been snake bitten by injuries, like Penelope's right up there. But we got the Cosmic Babes of Wrath versus the Triangle of Madness. What I do like about this is that, like, Chris and Willow are champions and on the same side of things at the same time. The Babes of Wrath, for whatever reason, like, haven't fully clicked. And now that Willow is TBS champion, I don't know if they're long for these tag titles. And I don't necessarily mind that, because if they're going to throw it on heels, like, they're going to get so much heat beating Harley and Willow that, like, I don't think the tag title reign has been, like, great. And I don't know if they're who I would have put it on from the beginning. But, like, if it's Megan and Penelope, if they stick with Megan and Marina, like, they're going to get a ton of heat beating Willow and Harley. So I don't hate that. But what I do hate is Chris Statlander getting pinned here. Now, what I will say is I fucking love Tekla. Like, I thought she would translate well to American TV. I thought she was off to a really great start. She has felt so in a groove with some of these backstage promos, because they have this dark air about them, but she's just there to kick people's asses. And that's awesome. Like, I feel like there's an effortless coolness that is here with Tekla, and I don't think she's lost yet. So she's due for a title win, but, like, in a multi-person match, isn't the point that you don't have to pin a champion? That's what I always thought. I hate that. It's some WWE-esque booking shit that I've always hated, no matter where it is in wrestling. But I don't love it. I don't love it. And Ryan, I don't know if it affected how many funds you would give it. That's my big thing.
Okay. It was a lot of fun. Like you, it had some more storyline flaws that I disliked more than, I think the wrestling was great, but I don't like Stat taking the pin. I said this last week, I don't love Tekla right now being the challenger, in the sense that I don't think they've built her up enough. I think they were, and then they stopped. And I wish they had continued to build her up so that, like, she naturally became this threat. But they do this with all their women's challengers, where, like, there's no challenger, and then suddenly they hotshot them. You're muted.
It was very weird that the match with Jamie wasn't a triple threat. Like, I liked the match with Jamie and Chris. I felt like people overreacted about the crowd reaction, and it was always going to be that style match. But it just felt like the story was for Tekla to be in it, and that they put that off for a little bit. I don't know if it was because she was going to Japan for a minute or what, but, like, that was a very, very weird call. Hi, Kylie. We see you in the chat. I hope you're doing well. But yeah, to your point, like, it does feel like they have white hot momentum with Tekla. It's starting to wane a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like I said, Tekla was, when she came in, she had all this momentum and she was being primed to move up, and then they just kind of stopped. And now again, she is the main challenger for Statlander. It's like, you got it. Had you just kept her winning, even if they were minor feuds, once again, you would have put other women's talent on TV, which would have been great. And two, she would feel more naturally over when she went to face Statlander. Even if she wasn't going to win, it would have felt more natural. They do it with not all the men, but they do it with a lot of, at least a decent amount of, with the championship of the men, where these guys tend to get themselves in a lot of feuds and they're naturally over and they get pushed. The women, they feel like they could just heat up a challenger of the week. And I hate that. It's like, keep these challengers wrestling all the time and then they'll be fine. Come, you know, you won't be like, where'd she come from out of nowhere? It's I don't know. I don't want to, obviously I'm a fan of Tekla. Like you said, she's awesome. So I'm cool with her being the person. I just wish they had kept her winning stuff. And like I said, would also got other women in. Well, otherwise, I think the Babes of Wrath clicked for me personally, but I get where you say they didn't, but they aren't long to hold these titles, which is fine. Get them the win, get them to be the established first champions, which shows that you have two of your bigger, especially with Willow, one of your biggest stars in the women's division with the belt. Then the team that beats them is going to get a lot of heat. They're going to matter. It all adds up.
It was weird because they did such a good job coming out of Blood and Guts of making that the sustaining story. Like, they did a good job of keeping that momentum alive with everything that they put into building that. Coming out of it, it felt like Chris's next challengers were going to be the people on the other side. And then they took this weird detour in between. So it feels very disjointed. Feels very disjointed to your point. But Joe, what did you think of this match? Are you a Babe of Wrath, most importantly? That's what I want to know.
I don't know about that. It was about 2 out of 4 fun for me. I don't know. It wasn't the cleanest match that these six people had. I can understand a little bit more of why Stat took the pin, even though, like you and Ryan, I usually don't like that. I like the idea of the story of her stretching herself and to take the spear and then to take the pin to show that, you know, she's in it for Willow. My main thing was just that I need some more variety from this division. I'm tired of seeing the same 6 to 8 women. I feel like just seeing this 6, Tony, Mina, and maybe Megan Bain. And like, I need more people woven in here because I get, we have all the championships on the same people. We can figure out a way to weave in some other people like they're doing on the men's side, whether it's some one-off matches or, I don't know, just anything to get people on TV.
I agree. Their talent rotation needs to improve greatly. Like, Ty Mello, Nyla, I thought we'd be getting more of that with the tag division. Like, I feel like, man, like Killer Kelly being available, I'm like, pair her with Nyla. That would be such a fun tag team. Like, there's all these combinations of things that you could align. Like, Diamante is doing whatever she's doing on ROH sporadically. Like, you could do such cool stuff. So I agree. I would like to see the talent rotation pick up for sure. But we've got Renee Paquette with Jet Speed in the back, but they don't even get to talk because Swerve is here and he says that he believes in Jet Speed. And he used to tear it up on the indies with Mike Bailey, which is very true. And when he got to AEW, that was one of the first names that he put in Tony Khan's ear was Kevin Knight. And Kevin Knight has translated so beautifully to AEW. But here comes Hanger. He tells Samoa Joe he's going to take everything from him on this Saturday's Collision. He's taking the trios titles and, oh, Jet Speed. Guess who the partners are? They're you, pal. So looks like that's where we're heading. And then we get confirmation of Fightful Select's report that the Rascals are coming to AEW soon with their like cool font and colors. They're a very, very fun, like marketable brand as well, in addition to this. But we talked about that extensively at the beginning of the show. How are you feeling about this trios deal? Either one of you.
I think this is pretty simple what's going to happen now. I like the team. I love Jet Speed. So, but it can't last long. That's the only thing. So they're going to have to get the belts off them quickly just because I don't want that story to extend. Jet Speed with someone else would be a lot of, like, Hangman's awesome, but I don't know who the third would be, but Jet Speed with a third person, so that when someone like the Rascals come in or something like that would be better, because those trios matches would be unbelievable. But we all, it's pretty sure thing that Hobbs is going to lose. They're going to lose because Hobbs is going to lose the title. And there you go.
Which is funny because that story was built around kind of like the free burning of it all. And stuff. But Joe, your thoughts on this?
You have to find a third person for Jet Speed that whose name would go with theirs. Like if you find someone has a last name like Hyper or something that would flow with that team. But yeah, I don't, it's a good way to transition and maybe close that chapter with Heyman and Joe, and they can kind of win the belts off of that, and Heyman can go focus on his quest to being world champion again. But yeah, it's a fun little group. It's an interesting grouping of Heyman and Jet Speed, but they'll win a few matches, and then I don't know who they're dropping to, though.
They could sign Richard Holiday, and they could be Jet Speed Holiday.
Ooh, I like that.
Nothing beats a Jet Speed Holiday.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Thinking. I came back hot today, guys.
That was well done. Well worth the return.
Well, let's talk about our main event here. Fantastic match between Bandido and MJF. So good. MJF is so much better when you don't overproduce a bunch of bullshit for him. And I feel like this was so, so, so good. Like, something with MJF working with luchadors just clicks in. Like, I really, really liked this. You have Bryan Danielson on commentary at the end of this going, "My God, it's the Yes Lock. It's the LaBelle Lock. Please don't sue me again, WWE." But I love Bandido just flipping off the ref of like, "I'm not going to tap until he falls asleep." And then post-match, you got MJF putting Bandido over, which I really liked. Him saying, like, "I kind of laughed when everyone said you were a future world champion, but that is obviously true." And then in true heel fashion, he hits him really hard, really hard with the title belt. It goes to demask him, but Brody King comes out. Pay no mind to the fact that there were pictures of Brody King at MJF's wedding. I think he was a groomsman, in fact. So they hate each other. TV is the truth. What you saw online is lying to you. But this was really, really good. This match was super, super fun. This episode, I was like, you bought my trust with the overrun. Like, there's not a lot on here that I would have changed from a time sequencing perspective. I thought the segments that we got on Dynamite tonight that dovetailed together went beautifully. This venue, by the way, was fucking awesome. Like, the lighting in there was great. It showed up beautiful on TV, the Arizona Financial Center or whatever it was. So this was really good. They also do like the main event lighting really cool. I've seen them do that at pay-per-views. They don't always do it on TV. They should do more of that because this looked really great. So I had a lot of fun with this match. This is the kind of MJF stuff I want to see more of, where it's a little less shitty ref bumps and dumb shit. Like, just give me MJF being a great wrestler and cheating along the way, but not like with this cartoonish bullshit. Like, I'm so tired of it. And that's partly AEW paying for the crimes of WWE. I have no problem admitting that, because I see it 3 times a week elsewhere. But be the alternative, AEW. So I really liked this. I thought it was a good call. I liked the way that the show closed out. And I like that the title feels very, very important. It feels very, very important right now. So some good shit there. Joe, we're going to toss it to you. What did you think?
Love the pace of the match. I thought, the pace and even the timing, I thought him and Bandido had really good chemistry. I thought, like, one example that stuck out in my head was, the trip slide, where he slides and Bandido does his back handspring. The timing it takes to get that down to not mess up each other's movement was impressive. I love how the commentary put over Bandido's arm injury, and then shortly right after that, MJF started arguing and working on it for the rest of the match. The only thing I wasn't a fan of was just the fact that I'm not a fan of people passing out in cross faces and arm bars. But that's just old for me.
That's fair. I think Danielson did a good job of, like, he was talking about how much pain that's put on the shoulder, and whether or not that feels true. Like, if Brian Danielson is telling me it, I'll bite. You know what I mean? So, but I agree with you. Like, the omoplata is a funny one, because it's like, it looks vicious, but like, what is actually being targeted and hurt here? But a good one. But a good one. Ryan, your thoughts on tonight's main event?
Well, the crowd chanted, "This is awesome," and they were right. This was awesome.
Was it "This was for funds"? Though that's what people really want to know.
This was, if I could get to the media, for funds.
Hey! This was for funds.
I can't do it to the beat because the clicking just doesn't work that well. But like you said, when they let MJF just go out and wrestle normal matches, he's fucking incredible. So just do that more. I'm with Joe on guys passing out from locks like that. I think they would have been like, I get what Danielson was saying. And I'm not trying to get into the weeds of like what story. I think it's a better explanation if you try to put him like he's used up all of his energy. He's got nothing to try to get out of that lock. So like, he can't catch his breath. He can't, like, some kind of story. Cause you're not passing out from that lock. Like, you're just not. But it's a minor thing. Overall, perfect. It let Max look really good and strong and evil. Bandido's a freaking incredible. And listen, just because Brody King came out doesn't mean he hates Max. He just had to save Bandido. That's all.
That's it.
You would run to stop your friend if he was doing something to your other friend. Like, you just got to get there.
Depends on how intimidating the one friend is, because there are situations I'm just not cut out for in this world. But we'll take it. We'll take it for an end of Dynamite. It feels like there's some really good card positioning right now. The top of the card feels like the top of the card. The middle of the card with Mark Briscoe, they definitely need to straighten out. But like, I feel like there's a lot of clarity that isn't always there in the AEW product right now, as far as like how the pieces are aligned. So I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying that quite a bit. But that is our episode of AEW Dynamite. A big night on the signings and the free agent fronts. Big night for my Duolingo popping up on my phone, reminding me that I have till midnight to keep my streak alive. But before I rush to my little bird friend, Joe, it's so nice to be back here with you. I hope you're doing well. A noticeably different backdrop, but where can the good people find you?
Oh, sure. I'm still hanging out online, so you can find me on the social medias at _AsianJoe. I haven't done a serial review blog in a long time, but if you have any recommendations, feel free to hit me up. I will try to get back on that. Other than that, yeah, I will. Next time I see you, Kate, I'll be older and maybe wiser, but older.
Oh my goodness. Some birthday season. Burr, 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 burr.
Don't you do it. You can't be preparing yourself.
I was teeing Joe up, but if he doesn't want to do it.
Wow. I don't know if she can. The best part is she can't re-add herself back to the stage.
Sorry, yeah.
So just let that sit.
Ryan, I feel like the chapter of me being gone is in the past. One might call it history. And if there's anything I'm here for, it's history. And I wish there was somewhere that I could be here for history, but I don't know of anywhere like that. Do you?
So first of all, great segue. I really do. Thanks appreciate so it. I was wondering where you were going to go with it, especially after dropping yourself off screen with the inability to come back. You can follow me, first of all, on all our socials at Mark Order Pod. But then also at Here for History or at _ Here for History, depending on the social. But more importantly, YouTube or website, hereforhistory.com, some blog. I have to do more blogs going in the future. But the reason I haven't is I've been catching up on my YouTube, which is Here for History, where I have my series A Historian Learns About. Assuming my editing doesn't fall apart tomorrow, I should have a new one out by Friday. So there you go.
Love that for you. You can catch me on Fightful and on social media sometimes at Miss Kayfabe. You can go to those places and see me do stuff on hopefully a more consistent basis than I have been. It's very, very nice to be back here. I miss talking AEW. I will not be here next week. I'm going to be here on an other week basis, probably until March. We're going to see how that goes for the old lungs for a little bit, but it's very, very nice to be back. I miss talking AEW. I miss these goofballs. I miss everybody in the chat. I love getting to do this and have so much fun with y'all. And a good episode of Dynamite to return on, too. This was a fun one and an eventful one on the old news front. So good shit. We're going to get out of here. Hour and 15 minutes. We'll take it. Let's go.
All right. So I put up the outro. Then I got to scroll down, up the volume, and hit outro.
Mark Porter podcast. I'm back at Mark Porter.